Okay, so ready to dive into something a bit different today. We're going to be talking taxes.
Taxes. Oh, are we in for a boring one?
Haha, not necessarily. It's actually a pretty interesting case, at least in my opinion.
All right, you've got my attention. What case are we looking at?
It's called Sargent v. Commissioner, decided by the Eighth Circuit back in 1991.
Okay, 1991, professional athletes, IRS. I'm sensing a theme here. What's the gist?
Basically, it revolves around two professional hockey players, Gary Sargent and Stephen Kristoff, who played for the Minnesota North Stars. They got into a bit of a tussle with the IRS over how they were getting paid.
Ah, the classic athlete versus taxman scenario. Always a good story.
Right. So the thing is, these players weren't getting paid directly by the team. They'd set up these things called personal service corporations, or PSEs for short. Think of them like their own little companies specifically for offering their hockey skills.
PSCs, got it. So the North Stars paid the PSCs, and then the PSCs paid the players.
Exactly. And that's where the IRS got their feathers ruffled. They argued that the income should be taxed directly to the players, not to their corporations.
So the IRS saw right through the corporate veil. They figured the players were the ones actually earning the income on the ice.
Precisely. And this is where it gets legally interesting. The core question became, who was the real employer for tax purposes? Was it the players' PSCs, or was it the Minnesota North Stars?
I see. So it gets into the nitty-gritty of employer-employee relationships. Was there enough control exerted by the PSEs to justify them being the employer in the eyes of the taxman?
Yep, that's the crux of it. And this case really highlights the difference between having control on paper versus who's actually calling the shots in reality.
All right, so how did this whole thing play out in court?
Well, first it went to tax court, and they actually sided with the IRS.
Really, what was their reasoning?
They used what's called the team test. They basically said professional athletes are so integral to their teams that the income they earn is inherently tied to playing for that team.
Makes sense on the surface. Hard to imagine a hockey player making big bucks without being part of a team.
Right. And they also leaned on a legal concept called Lucas v. Earl, which essentially says you can't just assign your income to someone else to avoid taxes. The person who actually earns it is the one who gets taxed.
So they saw the PSCs as just a way to shuffle income around, not a real employer?
Pretty much. But hold on, because this is where things get even more interesting. The Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals actually reversed the tax court's decision.
Whoa, a plot twist. What made the Eighth Circuit see things differently?
They took a much closer look at the contracts involved. They focused on two key relationships. One, the employment agreements between the players and their PSCs, and two, the service contracts between the PSCs and the Minnesota North Stars.
Okay, so multiple contracts are in play here. How did that sway the Eighth Circuit?
Well, the employment agreements showed that the players were technically employees of their own corporations. Then, the service contracts clearly stated that the North Stars were hiring the corporations for the player services, not the players directly.
Ah, so the Eighth Circuit was saying, look, the contracts are clear. The PSCs are the ones providing the service.
Exactly. They put a lot of emphasis on who had the right to control the player services, and based on the contracts, that right belonged to the PSCs. They could hire and fire the players.
Interesting. So even though the coaches were telling the players what to do on the ice, the legal power to employ or let them go resided with the PSCs.
Right. And to drive this point home, the Eighth Circuit created what they called the control
The
test.
control test, what's that all about?
It distinguishes between the contractual right to control services, which the PSCs had, and the day-to-day practical supervision, which might be in the hands of the coach. Think of it like owning a car versus driving a car.
Okay, I get it. Owning the car, you get to decide who drives it. But someone else might be behind the wheel at any given time.
Perfect analogy. The PSCs own the car, so to speak, meaning they have the legal right to control, even if the coaches were doing the driving. Plus, the team was paying the PSCs directly, not the players, which further solidified the PSCs' role as the contracting entities. So, with all that, the Eighth Circuit decided the PSCs were legitimate businesses, not just schemes to avoid taxes.
So they basically said, if you set up your PSC properly and the contracts reflect that, we'll recognize it as the employer.
Exactly. But of course, there's always another side to the story. One of the judges on the Eighth Circuit panel, Judge Arnold, actually dissented. He wasn't buying the majority's logic.
What was his beef with it?
He felt the majority was putting way too much emphasis on the formal contracts and ignoring the reality of the situation. In his opinion, the Minnesota North Stars coaches had so much control over how the players actually performed their jobs, you know, dictating strategies, positions, playing time, all that.
So he was saying that in practice, the team was calling the shots, regardless of what the contract said.
Exactly. He called the whole arrangement fanciful, this idea that players were essentially taking orders from themselves as corporate officers. He felt the players were, for all intents and purposes, working for the team, and the PSCs were just a legal loophole.
Ah, so it comes back to that age-old debate of substance over form. Judge Arnold felt the economic reality of the situation should have taken precedence.
Exactly. And it's a valid point. It shows how tax law can sometimes get really tricky when trying to reconcile these legal structures with what's actually happening in the real world.
Fascinating stuff. So even with the dissent, did the Eighth Circuit lay out any sort of test for determining who the employer is in these PSC cases?
They did. It's a two-pronged approach. First, you need a valid employment contract between the individual and their PSC.
Okay, so that formalizes the relationship between the person and their own company. Right. What's the second prong?
You need a valid service contract between the PSC and the third party, in this case, the hockey team, that clearly acknowledges the PSC's right to control the services being provided. And remember, the focus is on the right to control, not necessarily the day-to-day management.
Got it. So Sargent v. Commissioner ended up being a pretty important case for professionals using PSCs.
Absolutely. It gave them legal backing to use this structure for tax planning, as long as they were careful about how they set things up contractually.
So it's not enough to just create a PSC. You got to make sure those contracts are airtight and reflect the intended relationships and control dynamics.
Precisely. And the case also highlighted this really crucial distinction between contractual control, which is what the courts will look at, and practical supervision, which might be happening on a daily basis, but doesn't necessarily determine the legal employment relationship for tax purposes.
So Sargent gave professionals a roadmap, but also emphasized the need to be really meticulous about the legal details.
Absolutely. Now, thinking bigger picture for a sec, it's interesting to consider how this whole case might apply in today's world, you know, with the gig economy exploding and more people working as independent contractors.
Yeah, that's a great point. You've got all these different work arrangements popping up. Are they employees or are they something else? Who has the control? It gets pretty murky.
Right. And Sargent raises some thought-provoking questions about how these concepts of contractual control versus practical supervision might play out in those situations. Like, what happens when the legal control and the actual control seem to be pointing in opposite directions? Who's the employer then?
A lot to chew on there.
Definitely. Well, that wraps up our deep dive into Sargent v. Commissioner. It's a case that might seem a bit niche on the surface, but it really gets to the heart of some fundamental principles in tax law and employment relationships. Thanks for joining us.